conclusion out of need that one should not loiter, you know, that after having fulfilled one's basic need, that then one finds other needs or wants, which become needs, you know, but one does what has to be done and gets back into the masjid. But the other part was whether the verse in the Quran referring to the believers in seclusion in the masjids, whether this verse, which seems to be a general verse, is the basis under which or by which the scholars hold that the i'tikaf may take place in any masjid. The brother was asking me if that was the case. I cannot say whether this is the basis of the argument or whether there are actually other hadiths which may be of a general meaning also. And he asked if it was possible next week I would bring the hadiths which specifically refer to Mecca and Medina. Brother Uthman, do you have something on that? Oh, okay.
Is it haram or to
trim? Okay, question concerning the trimming of the beard. The vast majority of scholars hold that it is allowable for a Muslim to trim his beard. I mean, holding that it is required of a Muslim to grow a beard. Some hold that it is strongly required in the sense of it being a strongly recommended sunnah, and others hold that in fact it is compulsory, and that to shave one's beard is sinful. Having fulfilled the requirement of growing the beard, of course those who say that it is sunnah and not that it is compulsory, then trimming becomes, you know, doesn't really make any difference, because according to them, you could also shave it. I mean, you should, it's better to grow it, but you could shave it. But those who hold that it is compulsory, that the hadiths which command the growing of the beard are general commands which don't allow for any modification to shift that command from being a compulsory command to one which is a recommendation. Such who hold that position are themselves divided into two groups. Those who hold that the trimming is not allowed because the command is to grow your beard, and those who hold that trimming is possible. And those who allow the trimming also hold that the trimming would have to be in accordance with the way in which Ibn Umar, who was one of the narrators of the hadith on growing the beard, you know, being like a command of the Prophet ﷺ, that he trimmed his beard during Hajj, you know, when he was preparing for Ihram. He would grasp the beard, and whatever was at the end of his fist, you know, he would trim. So those who allow the trimming amongst those who hold that it's compulsory to grow your beard, hold that one may trim what is after the grasp. Other scholars hold that one may trim. The practice of Ibn Umar was indicating that trimming is allowed. Whether you do so after the grasp or before the grasp, as long as what you have grown on your face is considered to be a beard, you are fulfilling the commandment of growing your beard. If what you have on your face now can be classified as stubble, you know, what they call 12 o'clock shadow, and they have different names for it, which is when a person doesn't shave for a little while, that, you know, the hair starts to appear, that the hair has just started growing on their face, that is not considered to be a beard. And so one would not be fulfilling the growing of the beard in that case. But as long as one has grown the hairs on the face to the point where we classify this as a beard, then to trim after that, or to allow it to go to a certain length and then trim, is optional for the individual. Or, as our brother said, to even it or to neaten it, to make it what he considers to be tidy, because of course this issue of tidiness may be something, you know, relative. But we know the Prophet ﷺ, in his own practices, you know, would groom himself, he would grow his beard, trim his hair, and so on and so, and that he was particular about Muslims maintaining a certain level of tidiness. So if one sees in trimming the edges, you know, tidying his beard, you know, this is his option. Another person might say, well, this is not really tidiness, you know, or tidiness is a different...
The stronger opinion.
Well, I think what you have to do is look at the evidence yourself. If you ask me what is my opinion, what do I consider to be the stronger opinion, that's different than what may actually, in fact, be the stronger opinion. In my opinion, what I consider to be the stronger opinion based on what I've seen is that one is allowed to trim the beard as long as what one grows on the face is considered a beard that one may trim. Tidy. But gouging portions out of the beard, that is, growing the beard and, you know, shaving out portions of the beard, and this is actually breaking the principle of growing the beard. You know, the beard should grow its natural growth. You may tidy in the sense of tidying the edges, etc. But what is considered beard on your face should be grown. Of course, if the beard reaches a point where it's, you know, growing up your cheek and it's having difficulty to see, for you to remove it to be able to see, well, then I would say that, you know, you're doing it out of a necessity here. But just for, you know, chopping pieces to make, you know, like goatees and, you know, these type of other forms, one is then cutting off portions of one's beard, and you cannot really say one is growing one's beard, but growing a portion of his beard. Blood coming out of the body, does it break the fast? If you get a cut and you bleed, it doesn't break the fast. You know? If you defecate and some blood comes, it doesn't break the fast. If you urinate, some blood comes, it doesn't break the fast. As a male. However, for a female, if blood comes from her privates, that is the beginning of her menses, the minute that it begins, her fast is broken. So if she has 10 minutes left to the adhan and blood comes, her fast has broken. She has to repeat that day.
So we cannot donate blood while we are fasting?
No. You can donate blood whilst you're fasting. Because the giving of that blood does not break, or the taking of blood out of your system doesn't break your fast. It's the taking in. It's whatever comes in. But if they're taking blood out in one hand and they're giving you, you know, glucose in the other hand, well then your fast is broken because you're being fed in one hand as you're giving out on the other hand.
Okay.
Alaykum salam wa rahmatullah.
Concerning those people who are fasting without regular prayer, if they still pretend that they have the intention to fast, are they rewarded for their fasting or acceptance?
Question, if a person is not praying regularly and they make a sincere intention to fast, would their fast be valid or rewarded by Allah? It is possible. If a person, you know, is not praying regularly, meaning that they have not denied Salah, they have not given up Salah, but out of laziness, you know, they miss one prayer here, miss one prayer there. They know they're wrong. But when Ramadan comes, they make the intention to fast and they hold the fast and they try to do it the best they could. Yes, they are rewarded for what they're doing.
You're fasting as a result of that. But you're not praying at all. Would they be rewarded in any way for their fast?
Question concerning one who doesn't pray at all, but fast in the month of Ramadan, would they be rewarded for that fast? I would say that if that person doesn't pray at all, believing that the prayer is not compulsory for him, then there is no reward for that fast. Because once he gives up prayer, believing that it is not on him to pray, he has become a disbeliever. So the fast is of no value to him in terms of reward from Allah. But if he is not praying during the year out of laziness, right, that means that he still has a mustard seed's worth of iman in his heart, then his fast in Ramadan could be of benefit to him if the fast is a true fast. See, this is we're talking now on a theoretical level, right? In theory, we say, yes, he could take the benefit. But in practice, a person who does not pray all year long is out of contact with Allah all year long. Is it possible for him to establish a correct fast according to the spirit of the fast, which is necessary before you can get any reward? Because we already said the ritual is not giving us reward. Ritual can make us thirsty and hungry, but it won't get us the reward that Allah has promised for the fast. Can that person now establish a fast in accordance with the spirit of the fast? I would say it is very unlikely. You know, I can't say it can never be, but I would say it is very unlikely. So a person who would do such a thing as to give up prayer all year long, that person, to me, would be so far off the path, there is no way that he would be able to establish a correct fast. So though we may accept something in theory, we're talking about what is the Islamic position theoretically, you know, legally speaking on this man. We say yes. If he had not fallen into total disbelief, then yes, his fast may be accepted by Allah if it is in accordance to the spirit. But could he actually establish a fast according to the spirit? Practically speaking, I would doubt it very much. Before brothers leave, I just wanted to mention that this evening there is an invitation to breaking the fast with a couple of new Muslims, American military people, who just accepted Islam about a week ago. And there will be with them a group of others, Americans who are non-Muslims, who may be interested in Islam. Particularly those who are from Western backgrounds or who may be fluent in English, who would like to take part in this breaking of the fast with them and maybe try to offer something in the way of da'wah to them. They're invited to come to the call and guidance office in Batha at 5 o'clock, because from there we'll be leaving at 5 o'clock to go to the location where we'll be breaking the fast with somebody has arranged. And so all of you are welcome who feel that you may have something to contribute, or if you don't have any place to break the fast and you just like to come and break the fast there, you're also welcome. Inshallah.
In reference to Brother Bilal's comments, also on Monday over my house, there is a dinner in Sanskrit, but also there will be inshallah, number of non-Muslim guests. And anyone who is free Monday night, please come to my house and, you know, inshallah, help me with, you know, dawah for what you be wearing. Also, the brothers in the medical hour are talking about just possible to bring them over to my house Monday. That would be, inshallah, helpful also for the other people.
Question, brother in the back.
That one becomes angry, does it break your fast?
A question, what is the maximum anger at which point, or after which point your fast becomes broken? There hasn't been any specified amount. In fact, there hasn't, I don't know of any statement of the Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam in which he said that if you get angry, your fast is broken. For us to even go into that area to try to determine the specified amount. But the point is that if a person, you know, reaches a state in his fast where he is involved in cursing others, you know, speaking ill, spreading rumors, whether it is out of anger or out of jealousy or out of any of the other emotions, a person who does so, the Prophet ﷺ had said that such a person's fast is not acceptable to Allah. I mean, that's just the general principle. So if one finds oneself in a state where out of anger one has cursed somebody, said something that one shouldn't say, we ask, you make tawbah, you go back, you ask Allah for forgiveness. You don't say, well, okay, I cursed, now my fast is broken, I may as well go ahead and eat now, make up the day later. No, this doesn't break your fast automatically, you know. Ultimately, it is with Allah, He's the one who will judge whether what you have done has broken your fast and there's no reward for you or not. And as I said, when you commit errors of that kind, what is required or recommended of you is to turn back to Allah in repentance, and Allah is the all-forgiving, most merciful. Question here, can you explain the requirements for Umrah, which will not require us to sacrifice a sheep? Well, as far as I know, we don't have to sacrifice any sheep for making Umrah. This is a question, I think, which came from the sisters. Maybe, I think maybe if they meant Hajj, that's another thing, you know. We have three types of Hajj. In two, you sacrifice, and in one, you don't. The Hajj known as Ifrad, where one goes, where one does not join Umrah with Hajj, one does not sacrifice. That is, that one would go there and immediately begin the process of Hajj without going into doing Umrah before the Hajj. In that case, no sacrifice is required of the person. But the best Hajj is the one wherein we make the sacrifice. That is the one which the Prophet Muhammad made, and we should all try to do that. If we're not able, or for one reason, either economic or time-wise, then we may do the ifrad, the one without the sacrifice. But we may even make, even though we may economically be unable to make the sacrifice, we may still make that hajj which requires a sacrifice and to fast in its place. So I would say it is better, even if you are able, to join the Umrah with the Hajj, do them together, that it's better to go ahead and do it even though you cannot make the physical sacrifice, and to fast in its place.
Brother Sadi said that also you can pay someone to sacrifice on your behalf?
Yeah, paying somebody to sacrifice on your behalf is considered like you sacrificing. Of course, it is recommended if you know you can do it yourself, it is better to do it yourself. You know, just like those of us that don't make Hajj here, we're also recommended to make a sacrifice, those of us who are in our countries who didn't go to make the Hajj. It is better for you to make to cut the neck of the animal, make the dua yourself. However, it is allowable for you to pay a professional butcher, to Muslim butcher, to make that sacrifice for you.
Brother Sadiq has said that in Saudi Arabia, it is prohibited that you go to court.
No, it is not prohibited. In some areas, due to organizational purposes to avoid the spread of disease or for whatever reasons where people might just be sacrificing and dropping the animals in people's paths and, you know, to try to organize things and do it in a manner which is more clean and maintaining cleanliness and health, and also to be able to utilize the meats properly after the Hajj, etc. They've organized it so the slaughter takes place in certain places. But if you particularly want to slaughter, you can find a place in Mecca where you will be able to slaughter yourself. It's not impossible. If it is a big issue for you that you want to make that slaughter yourself, if you want to do it, you can find a way to do it. See, because there are slaughterhouses throughout Mecca itself. You see, the slaughter does not have to take place in Mina or so-and-so. There are slaughterhouses throughout Mecca where they're slaughtering animals all the time. People slaughter animals to have their meals, etc. So one can go to one of those slaughterhouses and perform the slaughter there. Yes, the Hajj Badal, where a person makes Hajj on behalf of somebody else who is unable to perform it due to reasons of sickness or ill health or some reason which stops them from doing it. It is permissible for you to do it even though they're living if you have done for yourself already. That's the only condition, that you cannot do it when you have not already done your own Hajj. And of course, when you're doing it for them, that has to be your intention, that you're doing it and the reward is going to them. You will get reward for the service that you're doing, but you would not get reward for the Hajj which you may perform.
Tienes que montar el metro, una vez lo ves, otra vez se siente provocado, otra vez se siente hasta qué punto las mujeres ver el deseo sexual, todas esas cosas que se rompen el ánimo. And when you mount, when you get inside the buses and trains and you walk in the streets, you see ladies half naked, everything is busting out all over. I mean, how do you try to control yourself? I mean, sometimes you lower your gaze and sometimes you look the other way, but sometimes it's just right in front of you. How do you handle that?
The Metropolitan.
Does this break your fasting? You know, you need some clarification here.
Well, for those. Well, for the fast, you know, where we have to, those of us who fast in circumstances out of places like in Arabia, you know, obviously the fast here in terms of the challenge, you know, in terms of the lewdness of the society where there's, you know, all this sexuality out there in the society that we may find back in Philippines, or as our brother's asking in Madrid, you know, he's from Spain, our brother's from Spain, or, you know, in New York City, or, you know, those of us who are coming from Western countries where, you know, the level of sexuality in the society is very high, you know, nakedness is all around us, you know, how does one deal with a fast there? I mean, here we can see it is relatively easy in that sense. We don't have those challenges. Does it break our fast, you know, if we see these things when we're fasting in these other areas? Well, you know, as the Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam had said, in regards to seeing corruption, the first look is for ourselves and the second look is for Satan. This is the general principle. In other words, in moving around the society, you cannot wear a blindfold. You have to function, you have to exist, and you have to walk around with your eyes open. However, after having seen something which is, you know, corrupt, you know the point at which what you saw was not by your choice, and at the point that now what you're seeing is by your choice. You see, when what happens, you change from a glance or a look to a stare. Right? When it changes over into the stare, where you're now taking pleasure from your look, then of course you're destroying your fast. What was seen outside of your control, this doesn't destroy your fast. And of course, the greater the trials that you are on in your fast, and the more patient you are, the greater the rewards. So conceivably, it is conceivable that somebody fasting in Madrid could get a greater reward for his fast in Madrid, though he's seeing all these things, than a person fasting here in Riyadh, who's not seeing these things. But it depends on how he handles it. So, you know, we know this is general. This is why even making Umrah in Ramadan, Prophet ﷺ said, one who makes Umrah in Ramadan is like one who makes Hajj with me. Because the trials of making the Umrah, the difficulties that are involved in making Umrah while fasting, you know, because of the trials involved here, the reward becomes even greater. So, this is a general principle, that, you know, Allah is going to judge us according to our circumstances. He's not going to give you less of a reward. There's a sister with some questions at the back there, please. He's not going to give you less of a reward because of the fact that you are exposed to certain things, and give somebody more of a reward because they were not exposed to those things, because this is outside of your control.
Love it. If you went to Mecca by car from Riyadh with the intention of performing, you have to fast from here.
If a person went to Mecca by car and they began the fast here, do they have to keep the fast?
Well, they're traveling, it's like 10 hours, 11 hours.
Yeah. You know, it's a 10 or 11 hour journey. Are you required to keep that fast if you began the fast? No. As a traveler, you're allowed to break the fast. However, in the morning, you cannot say, I am going to travel at 12 o'clock, so I'm not going to fast today. Not begin the fast. If you are here in Riyadh, when the time for fasting comes, you have to begin it. Because though it may be your intention to travel at 12 o'clock, you may not be able to travel due to Allah's will coming into effect here. So as long as you're within the place, your residence, and you have the ability to fast, you must begin the fast. But once you start your travel, in fact, in other words, Allah's destiny has allowed you to fulfill your will, and you begin the travel, and once you start on your journey, then you're allowed to break your fast.
How do we determine the stop and distance to allow us to break the fast or shorten the prayer?
Okay, the distance or time period at which we are allowed to break a fast or to shorten the prayer. There isn't a particular distance, though some of the schools of Islamic law have set different distances based on different practices of the Prophet Muhammad. It has been understood by a number of scholars also that the ultimate determining factor is one's intention. That once one has left the boundaries of the town of residence, with the intention for travel, one is now on a journey. One may now begin to break the fast, one may now begin to join and to shorten prayers. That it is ultimately the intention. You know, based on the different practices of the Prophet Muhammad, and that he did not in fact specify a distance, that whenever you reach certain distance, you can now break the fast or to shorten the prayer. Question. Oh, this is a rephrased question. Does one have to sacrifice a sheep if he makes some mistake in the Umrah or did not know the steps of making Umrah? Making a sacrifice to correct an error in the Umrah, to make that Umrah acceptable. To tell you the truth, I'm not really too certain that. Uthman, you have something on that?
Better than give a partial answer, I think it would be better to leave it for somebody who could give a full description, because I can't give all of the circumstances or general principles to clarify which circumstances you have to sacrifice.
But what you're saying, there is a general principle that for some mistakes of Umrah, you may sacrifice an animal to make the Umrah acceptable.
Yes, I believe so. Hajj and
Umrah. Hajj is clear, well known. But for Umrah, okay. To give us the specifics, we would have to say, wait inshallah until next week. We will burden our brother Uthman to get the details for us. Inshallah, if he's going to be here next Friday to give us the exact details on the what circumstance may one sacrifice and the Umrah become acceptable if they have broken some aspect of it.
I just want to say something on that. I had a similar incident a year ago where I went to Umrah. I went with the intention of making Umrah. After I finished visiting in Jeddah, but I went first for something on that. I had a similar incident a year ago where I went to Umrah. I went with the intention of making Umrah. After I finished visiting in Jeddah, But I went first to Medina to do personal visiting, and then I went to Jeddah, and then to Mecca. And upon asking Sheikh Ibrahim and others regarding this, they said that this was a mistake because I am from Riyadh. But the cat should have been, my intention was to make Umrah initially, but I should have done that first and then take care of that first Umrah social. So I had to sacrifice, that would be very democratic case. I had to sacrifice a seat for compensation purposes.
Okay, our brother is outlining a particular case which happened to him, in which he had gone to Jeddah with the intention of making Umrah from Riyadh. Following that, he decided to visit some friends in Medina, meaning that he has now left the boundaries of the Miqat. He's gone back outside of the Miqat and gone to visit his friends in Medina. Then he came back making Ihram from the Miqat of Medina and came in to make his Umrah, and that he was told that this was in fact an error on his part, because once he had entered into the passing the boundaries for Umrah coming from Riyadh, once he had passed those boundaries and gone inside of the area which is considered the inside the Miqat, then he must now make Umrah before leaving the Miqat. See, it is not the point of whether he came using the Miqat of Riyadh, because you could leave from Riyadh and make your Ihram from the Miqat of Medina, no harm. But it is that you should not go inside of the Miqat with the intention for Umrah and then come back out without making it and then come back in again. So in this case where he had done this, he was told by some of the leading scholars that to correct this mistake on his part, he had to sacrifice an animal.
In Mecca.
The sacrifice, yeah, it should be done in Mecca. Either that the person may send the money down to somebody in Mecca to do it for them, you know, or they go back to Mecca. Next time they go back to Mecca, they make the sacrifice. The Miqat being the boundaries set around Mecca, whereby a person who crosses them has to be in a state of ihram with the intention and the dress of the pilgrim.
Every time I go to the Jeddah, I go to the Umrah, but I go to Jeddah typically to work. My workout that is over. Now, what would be the correct way to do that? I bring my Ihram with me, but I don't make the Umrah until I complete my work.
Well, the correct way is that this is the case of our brother, is that he goes to Jeddah to for business purposes. His business sends him to Jeddah, and he has the intention of making Umrah, but he goes and does his business first. And then afterwards, he carries his ihram with him, and then afterwards, he makes his ihram and goes to make Umrah. Actually, this Umrah is not acceptable. It's incorrect. Because if you have left here with the intention of making Umrah after your business, but with the intention of making Umrah from here, then once you cross the Miqat, when you're on the plane, and they tell you, you're over the Miqat now. This is the place for those who are going to make Umrah to make Ihram. You must now put on your garments for Ihram and make the intention for Ihram. After having done that, if you land in Jeddah, you complete your business and then go make your Umrah, it's okay. As long as you are in that state of Ihram. But it is preferable if you come in, when you first come in, you should go make your Ihram and then you go and do your business. The only time what you have done there becomes allowable is if you have gone to Jeddah for business with no intention for Umrah. But you finish your business early and you realize, I have some time, let me do Umrah. In that case, you make your Ihram from Jeddah and go and make your Umrah. And that is perfectly acceptable. But according to the principle that our brother has pointed out here, you know, your Umrah would definitely be invalid. Because you have made Ihram inside of the Miqat, which is not allowable.
suppose he goes out and goes to the Mikat while he's there, proceeds to Makkah.
See, then he is in the case of the brother. He has to make a sacrifice. If he went to Jeddah, he did his business, then he went back outside of the Miqat, and he went to Taif, because that's the next one. He has to go to Taif and make Ihram from Taif and comes in, right? If he does that, then he will still have to sacrifice for having come inside of the Miqat with the intention for Umrah and not making the Umrah. But in sacrificing, he would then be able to make his Umrah valid. But if he just did his business, when he finished his business, then he put on his Ihram, made the intention for Umrah, that Umrah is invalid. There are some scholars, I should mention, who do hold that, you know, Ihram from Jeddah, you're coming on a plane, is acceptable. But this is a minority opinion, and it's not really supported by the clear evidence from the Sunnah.
Now, suppose I'm going there on business, and I put on my haram, and before I do the business, I make Umrah, and then I go and take care of business.
This is the best way. Best way is to come in with your haram, make your Umrah, and then do your business. The second best way would be to come in with your intention for Umrah, put on your Ihram, do your business, wearing your Ihram, and then go do your Umrah. Okay, inshallah, I think we should shut down now. We ask Allah to accept our gathering here as one in which we have sought His pleasure in understanding the khutbah and in learning some of the lessons that may be gained from Ramadan, and that we would be among those who, when hearing advice, act on that advice to benefit from it, so it doesn't become a source of punishment for us on the last day. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika, ashhadu an la ilaha illa ant, nastaghfiruka.